expire, and the people's plot in vain. And then down to verse 4, the one enthroned in heaven laughs, and the Lord scoffs at them. And remember that when you're listening to King Herod. Oh, let's see. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of law, he asked them, "Where is the Christ to be born?" "In Bethlehem of Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." May God add his blessing to our reading of this work.
Yeah, after you read Matthew 2, you can see a connection, can't you? I don't know how many of you have ever seen some of these stories. It seems like it happens more out west, but I don't know. It might happen, I don't know if I've ever heard it happen around here or not, but maybe more in some of our cities. But squatters? You heard about these stories about squatters that will come in, and when someone hasn't been in their home for a while, they come into the home, they take residence. And in some states, they have these laws that if you're there for a month or something, in a sense, it almost like becomes yours. I don't get it. It makes absolutely no sense to me. I mean, if I own the home, I own the home, and someone comes in and starts living there, that at least temporarily, I have no idea. I've never followed these things all the way through. It makes no sense, does it? It's like someone is invading my turf. Someone has come into my place of residence, has come into my life, so to speak, and taken over that home. Squatters. Don't leave too long if you go to Florida. Come back to see us, because if you don't, someone might grab your house and then you won't have a home when you get back. I hope that never happens to any of you. Someone invading my turf. This is what was going on with Herod this morning. Someone was invading his turf. Because, as you know, it had been reported all over the area there that there was a new king in town. Little babe that had been born in Bethlehem. He didn't know Bethlehem yet until the end of this text, because he asked him, where is this little one that's been born? That everybody says this guy is the king of the Jews. But someone was invading his turf. He may be asking at this point, is this one that was born, is he greater than I? Verses 3 through 6, he's concerned about what's going on here. This is a very real threat. He heard it in verse 3, and he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. He called the people and the chief priests, and he wanted to know what's going on. And he said, well, in Bethlehem is where this person was born. This is what the prophet said. This one would be born. He was concerned about that. Is this one greater than I? You know, I use sports analogies sometimes, so sorry about that. For those of you who can't stand sports, just forgive me. But it was just a week or two ago, I saw a Facebook post about some guy that you might know of from many, many years ago in football, when we couldn't win hardly any games, but we had the best running back of all time, I think, Barry Sanders. There's a college player this year who plays for Boise State. He's a running back. They're going to be in the college playoffs or whatever. And right now, I think he's just behind Barry Sanders as having the most yards in a season in football history in college. And Barry Sanders What a class act guy he is. He responds to this guy and says, I hope you break the record. What an amazing guy. He said, records were meant to be broken. And I hope you break the record. What a classy guy, huh? He didn't look at it as invading his turf. He looked at it as something greater would happen than what had been happening through him. And I look at this and I think, you know, this could be plopped right down in here with Herod too. I mean, there's a king that's coming that may be greater than I am, and I want to, right, go and worship him. You know the rest of the story, don't you? We didn't read the whole story today. He didn't want to go and worship this new king, this little babe that had come in Bethlehem. He wanted to kill him. And that's exactly what he attempted to do, isn't it? Because he was invading his turf. This one who was coming had a longer history than he did. He was prophesied about hundreds of years ago and even thousands of years ago when you go back even to the book of Genesis. He had a broader testimony. Even magi come from the east to hear about this king. And they weren't even Jews. And no one knows me better than I do. This is my kingdom and I'm going to protect it. Jesus was going to come in to upset the status quo. Not in a way that the disciples who came to know him as he became an adult, not in the way that they had envisioned it, but he was coming to upset the status quo. Herod wanted to investigate how that would affect him. And he recognized that if he was going to upset the status quo, there really could only be one king in power. The King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the Prince of Peace, the Wonderful Counselor. So he thought, I got to kill him because I want to be in control. Why would Herod see Jesus as a threat? Because he didn't understand what Jesus came to do. Why do people resist Jesus in today's world? I think a lot of times they don't understand what Jesus came to do. Some people say, I don't want to be a follower of Jesus Christ. I'll tell you what, sometimes they say that because they know Christians who aren't following Jesus Christ. Oh, it's a sad commentary on us sometimes, isn't it? Sometimes people see how we are. This king that came was going to change everything. He wasn't a threat to Herod if Herod really understood who Jesus was. He was not a threat. He was not a threat if Herod understood who Jesus really was. Jesus was going to change Herod into being who he wanted Herod to be if Herod was willing. You know, when our kingdom is exposed, we're challenged to think again, aren't we? I'm talking about our own personal kingdom. Jesus is a threat to my own personal kingdom. Herod felt that Jesus was a threat to his own personal kingdom. You see, because Jesus came to change the status quo, no longer could I be king. If I want Jesus to be a part of my life, Jesus has to be king. I need to put him first. What you and I don't understand sometimes is if we let Jesus be king, our life, in a sense, will be better. I'm not saying peaches and cream. I'm saying when our life is put under the kingship of Jesus Christ, we can have peace that passes all understanding. When our life is put under the kingship of Jesus Christ, we no longer have to fear. When I put my life under the kingship of Jesus Christ, I can find the satisfaction. All those things are ours in Jesus Christ. But I have to let go of my kingdom to let him be king. Herod knew that if Jesus was going to be king, Herod would no longer really be the king. But Jesus' kingdom was not of this world. He was a king, the King of heaven. When our kingdom is exposed, we're challenged to think again, aren't we? You might initially look at Jesus as a threat, but he's not a threat. It's almost like looking at it another way. When I have my own kingdom, my own way of doing things, or I'm putting my own puzzle together, and then Jesus comes and destroys the puzzle because it's not what he really wants for us. Or we've got our computer, and we've got all our stuff in that computer, and we're doing all the things we want to do, and then all of a sudden, the data is gone. He wants to make something new out of our life. That's what he wants. Out with the old and in with the new. Don't you hate, some of us, you hate to throw the old stuff away because you might use it again. How many are kind of like that here? There's a few. I might use that again in 25 years. I don't know. So you hate to throw it, and so you end up just keeping all those old things when sometimes they are totally useless. Sometimes we have to just say, God, help me to get rid of that old stuff that should not be a part of that new man or that new woman I am in Jesus Christ. Sometimes the gospel, when it's heard in its fullness, it might bother us because it says to us, first of all, it says this, come as you are. The gospel invites us to come as we are. It doesn't invite us to come after we've changed. I want you to get that this morning. The Bible tells us to come just as we are, as sin-stained as we are, as messed up as we are, as in the midst of sin that we might be. God says, I want you to come to me just as you are. And after you come to me and you receive the gospel, I want to transform you into the person I want you to be. It takes a lifetime to do that. But he transforms us into the people that he wants us to be. Are you trying to live in both kingdoms? Sometimes I think we are. We want to keep some of the old as we enter into the new. And we just need to let go. You have to choose. It's my little kingdom or it's his great kingdom. And I want to prepare for that. The Bible tells me that I'm not a citizen here, I'm a citizen in heaven. While I live in the world, I'm not of the world, and I need to recognize that and realize that whatever I do while in this world is all about my heavenly home, ultimately, whatever I do. The wise men who came to Bethlehem pointed to something that was new, something that was greater, something that was exciting. They wanted Herod to look at that same star and see that same thing, but he looked at it differently because he wanted to keep his kingdom. And they wanted to be introduced to something new, a greater king. You see, these wise men are sometimes called kings of the East. I don't know if they were actual kings or not, or whether they were just wise, important people where they were. I'm not positive. The Bible doesn't have give us a whole lot of clarity on that particular thing. But they were, in a sense, they had their kingdoms where they were. They came, and what did they do when they came and they saw Jesus? They bowed down and they acknowledged him as king. So what do we do during Advent? We acknowledge him as king of my heart and my life. Amen? Amen? Amen. God, we give you thanks and praise for your word this morning. It's your word that is thousands of years old, yet is absolutely brand new in our life. What you did back then affects me right now. What you did back then affects all of us right now. Lord, help us to let go of the kingdom that we have established not allowing you to be the king of our hearts and on the throne of our hearts because we want there. God, help us to step off the throne and bow down at your feet and say, you're the king. I want to be a part of your kingdom. And may this Advent season put us there. Because if we are put there, we are going to experience great and wonderful gifts this Christmas season. The gift of peace, the gift of joy, the gift of satisfaction, whether we're in plenty or in want, knowing that you will take care of us. Thank you for those promises. In Jesus' precious name, amen.